Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I'm your host, Dr. Chase Schreeder. Today on episode 112, I'm rejoined by Dr. John Kitchens from Lexington, Kentucky, for a brief episode discussing utilizing direct perfluorocarbon to silicone oil exchange in retinal surgery. As our separate shameless plug, please try and attend our instructional course at the annual ASRS meeting in Vancouver, Canada. We'll be doing an online content social media course on Friday, July 20th at 1 p.m. Other panelists include Sunir Garg, Charles Wyckoff, David Almeida, and Ajay Kurian. For more details, feel free to contact me directly, and we look forward to seeing you there. Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is happy to be rejoined by Dr. John Kitchens. Dr. Kitchens is a partner at Retinal Associates of Kentucky in Lexington, Kentucky, and he's here today to talk to us and answer some of my questions about direct perfluoron to oil exchanges. Dr. Kitchens, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Jay. Thanks for having me on.
So this question came up because there are a lot of people out there listening who already are doing PFO to oil exchanges, but I don't think the ASRS PAT survey has looked at this, but I would assume that most people are not doing direct exchanges. They're usually, if they are using perfluoron, going to air first and then from air to oil. And the scenarios where this could be helpful in many scenarios, but the most common scenarios maybe would be in a giant retinal tear case or a case of a relaxing retinectomy. So first, John, my first question is, was this something that you trained to do in fellowship or you taught yourself to do over time? Did you migrate away from using air? And in what situations do you like to do direct PFO to oil exchanges?
Yeah, Jay, I'll tell you, this was really something that I took interest in after I was already out. And I'll tell you, I'd read about it in a couple of articles and watched a couple of videos about it, maybe 10 or 11 years ago. And I had a very specific case of a young 8-year-old boy that I was doing, and our fellow was actually doing the case, and I was watching him and mentoring him, and he had a almost 360-degree giant retinal tear. And so we put in the PFO, got him flat, lasered him, and then when we went to air, the retina just completely slipped. And so I said, you know, Scott, let me take over. You know, this is just a fellow mistake. I'll get this retina dry enough. You just didn't dry it enough to get the PFO out and not have it slip. So I took over, went back to fluid, put PFO back in the eye and dried extensively. And, you know, it was kind of like, hey, watch me do this. And it slipped.
Right, right.
And I was like, man, I mean, I thought to myself, we're not going to be able to get this fixed unless I can do this. And I said, you know, there's never a better time to learn than now. Did it, and it went perfectly. The retina didn't slip. Everything went great. And so I said, gosh, this is really, really great and neat. Read up a little bit more about it and then started to do it pretty much for all of my PFO for oil exchanges. Certainly for GRTs and for retinectomies, it works really well. But it actually is just a lot faster than to have to go to that air as an intermediary. And also, you just don't have to be as perfect with getting a complete drying at the edge of any tear. So you really tend not to get any fluid that develops underneath the retina. It's a really nice technique.
Yeah, and so let's talk about nuts and bolts about how you do this. So for fellows who are listening, this is the point of the case. So let's say it's a giant retinal tear. You've done your vitrectomy. You filled up with the perfluoron. Now, you filled up your perfluoron past the edge of the giant tear, I'm assuming, filling essentially up to aura?
Yeah, you want it as full of a PFO fill as you can possibly get. So if you can get a complete fill of PFO, you want to have that complete fill because that's just going to get rid of any fluid that could potentially cause that retina to slip more posteriorly when you go to oil.
And then, so tell me how you set up. So you use an Alcon system for your PFO to oil exchanges?
Yeah, so we're using the Alcon Constellation system. Now, I know that there's a way on the foot pedal that you can have kind of a dual VFC for the first part of your foot pedal depression, and then you can get some extrusion. But I like to just do it with my soft tip open to air. So the situation or how I have this set up essentially is I'll have a light pipe in one hand, I'll have my soft tip open to air in my other hand, and I'll have my fellow holding the VFC 25 gauge oil infusion cannula in through the area where the infusion line used to be. Now, you can get some high tensile strength infusion line that you can replace your infusion line with and infuse oil in with the VFC foot pedal and not have your assistant hold it. But I find that, you know, we don't typically stock that, and it's just as easy to just have the fellow hold the oil cannula there and kind of, you know, put it in where the infusion line used to be. And then I just start to infuse the oil. I make sure that I have my soft tip in the middle of the eye. I don't have it too close to the nerve or the retina at first. And as I'm infusing the VFC-based oil infusion, watching the optic nerve. And when I see the optic nerve start to blanch and the vessels pulsate, then I let off. And that allows that PFO to just egress out through my soft tip. And then once the perfusion has returned, then basically I just push down on a little more, get a little bit more oil infusing in. The oil is going to go on top of the PFO. If there is any fluid, it will typically sandwich that fluid in between the PFO and the oil and will trap it so that it doesn't cause slippage. And I watch, and after you get about 80% of the PFO out of the eye, you will actually see a pretty well-defined PFO bubble. Mm-hmm. That you can just follow down and it will get smaller and smaller and smaller. I try to orient it so it's over the optic nerve head and then just tap that nerve head with the PFO in it to just get that little last bit out. Now, there's one exception, and that is when you don't have a complete fill of PFO and you may have a little bit of a fluid layer overlying your PFO. And what I like to do before I actually go to oil in that situation is I'll have my infusion line in still. I haven't removed it yet. And I'll go to air, and I'll use a soft tip on extrusion, and I'll create a pocket of air over the PFO where that fluid used to be. And that's to just try and get as much of that fluid out. If I know I've got a really good fill of the PFO, I don't necessarily do that. But if I'm worried that maybe it's a big eye and I don't want to open a second bottle of PFO, I'll create a little bit of an air sandwich there before I start to infuse my oil to prevent slippage.
So now I'm going to start with basic questions because we're going to work from front to back what you said with questions that people might have. So the first thing, and again, this is for the ignorant who may not, like me, who had not done a PFO oil exchange. I've done my first one recently. So you mentioned that you need the kind of high tensile strength line if you're going to hook the oil up to your infusion line. The reason being that the normal infusion line, what will happen if you try to hook the oil up to it directly?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've actually made that mistake and tried that. That the standard Alcon infusion line is not meant to have the high pressure 1,000 centistoke or 5,000 centistoke oil infused through it. So basically, it'll just kind of blow that line off of the tip that goes in to the eye. Now, it won't do any damage. It will give way in an area that will not do any harm to the eye, but it just can't handle that high pressure oil coming through it. So Med One actually makes an infusion line that's 25 gauge, that's a high tensile strength that you can actually hook to your VFC cannula. The one disadvantage, though, anytime you're going to take it through an infusion line like that is that you're probably not going to necessarily start your case with that type of infusion line. And also, anytime you add length to that, you're infusing really thick silicone oil by comparison through it, it's going to take a lot longer. So I like the fact that it's just a very short throw to have that 25-gauge VFC cannula in lieu of my infusion line and through that inferotemporal cannula to be able to infuse the oil. I feel like I have a little more control over it. It goes a little quicker.
And then, so the next question, and you mentioned this, but so when you first start the exchange, how important is it? So let's say it's a patient where you didn't need to do that air sandwich. You filled out that PFO to aura. Everything is flat. How important is it to go, for example, like you would in an air PFO exchange, to the edge of that GRT or retinectomy in that sort of case and dry that edge?
Not important at all, Jay. I just go right into the middle of the PFO, and that oil PFO interface is really, really good at keeping your retina attached. So as long as you don't have a substantial amount of fluid anterior to your PFO, you can just go straight into the middle of the eye and not have to tilt the eye, not have to tort the eye. You can just go right there and just start to infuse your oil and push out your PFO.
And you mentioned you're doing this passively through the soft tip, that you're just letting it egress out of the soft tip, or are you aspirating actively as you go down?
Yeah, I do it passively. You know, the oil is really good. Maybe takes a minute or two longer. You can do, like I mentioned before, that dual position foot pedal setup with the Alcon Constellation. The problem with that is the first half is VFC, and then the second half of depressing is going to be aspiration. And typically what will happen is that you will outrun your oil infusion with your extrusion, because the oil goes in so much more slowly than you can extrude the PFO. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to deal with any kind of hypotony or anything like that. So what you'll find is with a 25-gauge soft tip cannula, you can actually infuse the oil and leave your cannula open. I don't hook it to a syringe. I just leave it open to air, and it'll push that PFO out in a piecemeal fashion.
So one of the things you mentioned is you really have to watch that nerve, right? And so when you see that nerve turn pale, you know that you either stop infusing oil or reposition your soft tip or whatever you're using to remove the PFO. So let's talk about, we mentioned possible places where, you know, people who are doing this for the first time can have some difficulty. One we mentioned was the infusion line. You got to make sure you can't just hook it up directly unless you have that special high tensile line. You mentioned about watching the nerve. I mean, where do people really get hung up on this in experience, or in your experience when you were first doing this?
Yeah, so I think one of the toughest things is you'll go for a while before you actually see the edge of the PFO bubble. So you're going to basically go and you're going to be going, all right, is it working? Am I in the PFO or am I in the oil? Am I actually removing anything? What's happening here? Because you really do have to get a substantial amount of the oil in and the PFO out passively before you actually see the edges of the bubble. Honestly, it's only when you have about 25 to 30% of that PFO left that you actually will be able to start to see that. So that's why I say, you know, don't panic. Don't feel like, hey, it's not happening, it's not working. It is. You just got to give it some time and kind of, you know, just wait and watch. The second thing is, just as you alluded to, you want to make sure that that your pressure is good, that you're not jacking the pressure up too much by, one, watching the nerve and the perfusion. And the second thing is I usually have my non-dominant hand, ring finger or middle finger on the actual eye to just palpate the globe and just see if I can feel that that tension in the globe to make sure that we don't have too high of a pressure. And your pressure can run up to 40 or 50, and it'll very quickly equilibrate, but you want to just keep track of that.
And so one last question, you know, you mentioned that you'll have a capable assistant be in charge of holding the oil as it's infusing. You know, there's many people out there who don't have an assistant they operate with, or let's say you don't have an assistant that day, or someone you necessarily trust to hold things in the eye. What else can you do? What else do you like to do in those scenarios?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what I'll do in that situation is I'll actually put a chandelier in the eye, and the chandelier then becomes my light pipe, so to speak, for my ability to visualize. And I'll have the VFC cannula in one hand and the soft tip in the other hand. And then that way I'm infusing the oil. I have the illumination through my chandelier light. Then I have that soft tip to just kind of passively allow the egress out of the PFO.
Perfect. And then so final thing. So one of the things a lot of people do when removing PFO and then air PFO exchange, they like to rinse, for example, with balanced salt solution to kind of make sure there's no residual PFO. So I've gotten the question, you know, fellows have asked me, like, is there a higher chance, you think, of residual PFO with this technique? Or do you think, in your experience, the meniscus is clear enough that if you just go down to the nerve, you don't really need that extra rinse because it's a different sort of visualization?
Yeah, as long as you didn't have a lot of bubbles in your PFO at any point. So if you got a lot of bubbles and they kind of dispersed everywhere, you have bubbles on the edge of your larger PFO bubble, then I would say, hey, you know, this is going to be something that you may deal with that. But I'll tell you, if you just have a single large bubble, you can pretty much follow that down and guarantee that you're not going to run into any issues as far as that goes.
Perfect. Well, Dr. Kitchens, thanks so much for your time and speaking about this topic. This is a topic, again, I think there are more PFO oil exchanges maybe done in other countries than in the U.S., and maybe less surgeons here are doing them. But it's like you said, the advantage of less slippage, you get rid of one step in the process. and maybe a little more time efficient too. And time efficiency, if two things are equal, is very important too as we move in, and costs become a bigger consideration as surgeons. So any last thoughts before you go?
No, that's it, Jay. I think that if you give this a try, I think it'll be something that you'll implement more and more often throughout your surgeries, and that you'll really, really enjoy the benefits of doing that direct PFO for oil exchange.
All right. Well, Dr. Kitchens, thanks so much for your time, and hopefully we'll have you back soon.
Thanks, Jay. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. As always, you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. All 112 episodes, including this one, can be found there sorted by category. You'll also find our blog, Equal Round and Reactive Lessons from Our Pupils. Also on the website, you can sign up for our mailing list to get updated on the most recent episodes. At the bottom are links to subscribe in the iTunes Store as well as Google Play. You can also like our Facebook page or find us in the podcast section of the iTunes Store and Google Play. We're on Twitter at Retina Podcast, and to contact us, click on the Contact Us link on our website or email us at retinapodcast@gmail.com. We really love getting feedback about the things we can do better and things we are already doing well. We also appreciate anyone who subscribes via iTunes or Google Play to leave your positive comments in the form of a review. Many thanks to Dr. Kitchens for joining me. Thanks to Louis Kai, Mike Benincasa, and Angela Chang for producing a great episode. Finally, thank you, listeners, for what you do on a daily basis, the patient care you provide, articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire here. This is Jay Schreeder, signing off.
Feeling.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.